Welcome to the PLL Happy Hour podcast. We are prepping for the semifinals in Washington, D.C. I'm here, Matt Kinnear, with Dan Kaplan, Chris Rosenthal, and our guest is Chris Gray, Upper Rookie of the Year, Atlas Attackman, just finishing up a great season with the Atlas. And Chris, I know you'd rather be prepping for this weekend, but you're here with us, which is kind of a good consolation prize, and get to talk a little bit about lacrosse. So I'll just kick it off with year one. Was it everything that you expected to be? Was it more? How can you describe being a pro lacrosse player?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's everything and more. You know, it's everything you look up to as a little kid. And, you know, when you're playing college, you're playing in high school, you want to play college. And then when you're in college, you want to play professional. And, you know, fortunately enough, there's a great league now with great players, and you're playing with the best of the best. And obviously, like you said, it ended a little too soon for my liking, but just a really great experience overall. I've really enjoyed my time so far.
Cool. So I guess my first question is, did you have any of those, like, oh man, like that I've made it, like kind of that rookie moment where you go like and kind of stop and look around and you're like, wow, like this is pretty cool type of thing? And if so, like, where was it? Tell me a little bit about that.
I would say the first game it kind of sets in, because you go up to Albany for a week and you're kind of just practicing with a new team and a new group of guys you've never met. So once you kind of get on the field and you walk out of the tunnel, and it's like a pretty dramatic entrance compared to college, you're like kind of lined up and you're sitting there for like 5 minutes, and there's a pretty great crowd there. So, you know, it was definitely a really great opportunity, and, you know, kind of just running onto the field for the first time with a new group of guys that were really embracing of the rookies. So I think that was really cool. It was just like a, you know, I'm here kind of moment, and kind of was able to reflect on where I've came from, and, you know, where I started to where I am now. It's pretty nice to look back on.
And how about on the field? Did you have anything where you're like, man, like last year, that's a goal. This year I rolled and there was someone like automatically in my hands and telling me I suck, like something like that or anything?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think one of the first possessions I had, I was like behind the cage at X on our opposite bench side, so near like the Redwoods bench, and I absolutely sailed a pass over, I believe, Costabile's head. And one of the D-middies that we were playing came up to me and was just giving it to me, telling me how bad I was, how I sucked. I was like, well, yeah, it's a little different, but it's, you know, it kind of plays into my game. I like doing that stuff, so.
Yeah, so just, you know, from the rookie perspective, Chris, was there anybody who you felt kind of, you know, helped you along the way, you know, just kind of showed you what it was like to be a pro, get rid of some of that rookie pressure?
Off the bat, yeah, I think Eric Law comes to mind right away, because he's a vet in the league, and, you know, he's been doing this for a while, and coming onto an attack line with him and, you know, one of the best players in the league, and Jeff Teed, it was definitely a really smooth transition for me, because I had both of those guys. But really just the whole team in general, guys like Tucker Durkin, Trevor Baptiste, like they're all just great leaders, and we're able to kind of just take the rookies under their wings and show us what the Atlas is really about and show us what the league's about. And it was just a really smooth transition, because there's such great leaders on the team and really just great people to be around. Forget players, because everyone's great. They're just great guys, you know, to hang out with. So I definitely was really appreciative of that.
With Ben Rubior as your head coach, can you describe his coaching style? You know, just kind of take me into like a little bit of what the locker room and what the game day prep is with Coach Rubior.
Coach Rubes is the man. I mean, I've loved playing for him, and the rest of the coaching staff, they've been great. So it's definitely his coaching style. I would say he's definitely, you know, pretty laid back. He lets us kind of operate how we want. And he's never telling us we need to do this or play like robots. And it's definitely a very freestyle type of offense where we can kind of just be ourselves, which I've always really liked. And, you know, if we get out of line or, you know, we start playing sloppy, he's there to kind of put us back in line and tell us what we're doing wrong and kind of get on us. So it's definitely a coaching style that I've really appreciated. I know the guys on our team do as well. So yeah, he's a great guy. I can't say enough great things about him.
All right. So kind of piggybacking off of Matt's question there, say it's a scenario, you know, down late, you guys need a goal, something like that. Like, take us inside of an Atlas huddle. Like, who did the most of the talking? Like, was it player led? Was it mostly coach led? Like, I'm curious how that kind of works out. It's one thing that I find fascinating from the broadcasts is when they go like inside the huddle and, you know, there's five different coaches who all are playing at the highest level and have coached at high levels and just have, you know, great brains for the sport kind of working together to come up with something. Is that kind of how it is with the Atlas? Like, take me inside that.
I would say it's a mix between, you know, the coaches kind of telling us what they're seeing and them taking feedback from us and really kind of being collaborative, which I think is the coolest part. You know, it's a, they're very open to hear what we're seeing out there. I mean, we are playing, so, you know, we know where the slides are coming from. We know their tendencies on defense. So it's definitely a pretty collaborative environment. You know, when you have guys like John Crawley, who's the assistant coach at Hopkins now, he definitely knows the game very well. So he would speak up in the huddle a lot and just provide a lot of, like, pretty valuable insight into what the defense was doing, even some things that I wouldn't even pick up on early in the game. So I would say it's definitely, very, very collaborative and makes for a good offense, I think.
And speaking on your offense, your attack line is really interesting because, you know, they're names that we hear a lot about, but we don't really hear a lot from them, you know, like, you don't see a lot of, you know, Jeff Teat social media stuff or Eric Law, like, all over Instagram or whatever. What exactly are their personalities like, and how do they kind of mix with yours this season, you think?
They're both hysterical. I mean, like you said, they're quiet guys. I mean, Jeff especially, you know, but both of them are very quiet. They keep to themselves and they just work hard and they like to win. They don't like to get caught up in outside noise. And that's something that, like, joining their line, I think I kind of fit that personality too. So I was definitely pretty happy that we all meshed well together on and off the field. But I mean, for guys that come across as quiet, whenever they open their mouths, I'm always laughing. So it's definitely a really cool, interesting dynamic we have.
What was your, were you like a pro lacrosse fan growing up? And if so, I'm assuming you were a Lizards fan, but.
I went to a few Lizards games when I was a kid, but I can't say I followed the MLL too closely. It mostly kind of started when the PLL kicked off and really kind of piqued my interest.
What, were there any players though that you really looked up to and, you know, whether you tried to emulate your game or you just appreciated something about their game or watched them when you were growing up, who would those be?
I think a little piece of Rosie just died there, by the way. Chris Gray just killed a small piece of Rosie.
I didn't mean to, but
that's fine.
I mean,
that's fine.
To your question, I think, you know, I definitely watched a ton of college lacrosse growing up when I was, you know, younger. Guys like Rob Pinnell come to mind, just being an attack man from Long Island and kind of trying to emulate things that all attack men are doing. Guys like Lyle Thompson, who's obviously so creative. I think the best players kind of would admit that they take bits and pieces from each game. So I'm really always watching different players, even guys that are younger than me. You know, it's really a game that you can get better watching it and learning new things, and you can always get better at the end of the day. So I'm really always trying to watch, you know, different guys.
So I think you actually may have set a record for the longest interview possible with an Atlas player without being asked directly about playing with Jeff Teat. So I'm going to go ahead and end the streak right here at however long in we are. You know, what's that like when he has the ball, you just know, like, okay, at some point this thing's going to come wing into my ear or what?
Yeah, it's my favorite question. I love hyping up Jeff. I mean, because he doesn't do it for himself. So someone's got to do it. It's a blast. I mean, it's the first thing that kind of clicks into your head as a rookie when you get drafted to the Atlas and, you know, playing with Jeff T, Trevor Baptiste and all those guys. It's a really, really incredible opportunity. And like you said, you know, you always have to be ready for a pass because his vision and his IQ is really off the charts. I mean, our last game, he threw me a pass like from the top left of the box and I was on like the bottom right hand side. And like no one would have ever thrown that pass, but I didn't have to move my stick and I just caught it and literally just quick sticked it in. I did absolutely nothing. But, you know, just the reads that he makes is crazy. And I mean, it's really goes the other way too. Like you can throw him a bad pass and he's going to catch it. And he's got like that box background. So he's very wristy and he's going to score. So it's definitely, he's definitely up there for one of my favorite players that I've played with. It's been fun so far. I'm looking forward to more opportunities.
And, you know, you mentioned Trevor Baptiste a little bit earlier. And so I heard that he's the one who gave you the nickname Chris Greasy. Just wanted to get your thoughts on that nickname, how you feel about it, if you feel like it's going to stick for a while. What do you think?
I mean, I'll take it. You know, it's Trevor. So he kind of says something and everyone else goes with it. But I think they were listening to like a Chris Brown song on the speaker. Trevor always carries a speaker around every practice. He's like the light of every practice. He's always giving guys high fives, smiling, and he's just got this really contagious energy about him that guys really just kind of appreciate. And he was playing music one day, and I think him and Romar were like joking around, and one of them called me in, and then from there it stuck. And yeah, like I said, I'll take it. I don't really mind it. So,
is that your first lacrosse nickname?
I guess so. I mean, people usually kind of just call me like CG or something. So Chris Greasy was new, but I like it. You know, I don't mind it.
Well, you got that nice, like, you know, just, you know, one syllable first name, one syllable last name. Like, you don't really need the nickname. You got a pretty cool, like, you know, direct marketable name as it is. So, but I think Trevor got you something a little better than Chris Gray there. Right now it's September 8th that we're recording this. So, you know, we're the start of the class of 2024, you know, is getting their reach out now. How much do you follow that? Like, how much, like, do you like have any sort of pulse on, you know, the next wave of high school talent, how Carolina's doing in the recruiting process? And just, do you have any thoughts on kind of, you know, the beginning of this recruiting process for the class of 2024?
I would say, I mean, I follow it. I think just being a lacrosse guy, I like kind of seeing where, you know, where teams are going to be in the future. And obviously I have friends and family friends back home who are going through the recruiting process now. So kind of offering up advice to them and being a resource for them, I think, is something that kind of keeps me in the loop. But then again, you know, you see stuff on social media, which is always interesting. And I love, you know, watching college lacrosse. I'm going to watch the Heels all year this year. I live with two guys on the team, so, you know, I've been asking about them every day, how their practice is going. But as far as the recruiting period goes, I mean, it's definitely a really exciting time. So it's cool to see where kids are committing, and especially kids from my hometown who I know. So it's been really cool to see.
And the better question for that is just what is your advice for kids who are kind of jumping into, you know, it's a really like overwhelming, it's a fun thing, but it's an overwhelming thing. There's a lot of emotions. There's a lot that goes into it. What's kind of generally your advice to youngsters who are in this position?
I would say take it slow. You know, it can be a really frustrating time, especially for an under-recruited kid that maybe hasn't panned out yet. But at the end of the day, there really is a place for everyone. And D1, D2, or D3, you know, you're going to find a home, and it's nothing to really stress about, because in the moment it can seem like it's a, you know, it's a really big deal. But at the end of the day, I really do think that there is a place for everyone, and hard work will take you a long way. So, you know, just keep working at it and stay the course.
All right. So Matt dropped it's September 8th or whatever it is. I don't know the exact date, but I'm going to make you backtrack in a machine and go back to the beginning of the season to the Just the Corner incident. What happened? And you said it, like, did you realize right away, like, that it was going to like take off that way, or like what happened there?
No, I mean, it was funny because the league, I think one of the first interviews I did when I got there, they were like, we don't really like that, like, coaches and the very, like, politically correct interviews where you're just thanking everyone. So have a little, you know, don't be afraid to say things. And that was kind of in the back of my mind all week, because I mean, when I do those interviews, I'm not really thinking, oh, be politically correct. I kind of just speak from the heart. But that one kind of was a little different than any interview I've ever done. But what I meant by it was either going to miss or hit the corner, you know? So like, basically we have backup if I missed it and I see the corner, I'm going to shoot. So, you know, as long as the goalie's not saving it, I'm fine with that. But yeah, I mean, it took off, and I think they made like t-shirts about it the next day, which was funny to see. Yeah. I think my mom was probably the only person that bought them, but it worked out.
Yeah, no, those t-shirts definitely exist. And don't be surprised if currently mom is number one, then there may be number two after this interview.
It was accidentally a very dope thing to say. Sometimes things just work out like that, right?
Yeah, it's kind of laughing after it.
Yeah, no, it worked great. It sounded very smooth. I kind of want to go off of what Dan was just saying. How did you kind of, you know, there's all this sort of pressure of playing, you know, at a higher level, but the PLL kind of brings, you know, the additional side to it. Like you're talking about being interviewed, you know, you're going to have somebody running up to you between plays, you know, after you score a goal, there's a camera there. How did that sort of thing impact you? Was it something that you could put out of your mind pretty quickly, or did you kind of think about it a lot?
I think it was just something I knew was going to happen. I mean, the PLL does such a great job with their marketing and their media. So, you know, from day one, there was cameras everywhere. And I think at the end of the day, you just have to keep reminding yourself you're there. It's your job. And you got to get things done. So, I mean, just kind of tuning it out, but at the same time, having fun with it. You know, if the opportunity presents itself, be yourself and have a good time. So I think that's what I was really going for at the end of the day.
You're playing against the best defenders in the world in the Premier Lacrosse League each week. And, you know, generally you're getting one of those best defenders with your matchup. And who is someone that, you know, I don't know if surprise is the right word, because I don't think there's anyone who you thought was going to be an easy matchup that you played week in and week out. But what is just something that you really learned or found surprising or were really like taken aback from, you know, any matchup that you had this year of any defender?
They're all very good. I think that, I mean, you know, going in, you expect that it's the best of the best. But I mean, even in college, I think the biggest thing for me, not necessarily on a matchup, but like if you would get switched onto a short stick in college, it's like, all right, you're going to barely have to dodge here. You just want to kind of get that slide because you know it's coming. But when you get switched onto a D-Midi in the league, it's, you know, even for example, guys like Danny Logan, like you see him, you're like, damn, I kind of wish I had a pole on me right now, because they're all so athletic and it is the best of the best. So they're all freak athletes, and it's just a really fun league to play in because everyone's super competitive and, you know, talking shit and wants to win. So it's fun.
Yeah. Did the trash talking pick up immensely? I get the vibe that, you know, obviously you're playing ACC ball, so you weren't playing like, you know, random pickup league when you got there. But I feel like the trash talk is at another level this year.
Yeah. I think it's just kind of the competitive nature of all the teams. You know, everyone has the same goal in mind, and the team you're playing is standing in your way of that goal. So, you know, tensions are definitely pretty high, but I think the coolest part is after the games, it doesn't really seem to spill over, and, you know, everyone kind of just goes back and knows it's just a job. And at the end of the day, you just want to win. So everyone's really the same.
I'm kind of going to keep just stealing Matt's questions and shifting them a little bit. And so there he asked about guys guarding you, you know, I'm going to ask about the other side of the ball, you know, during games when the ball's down the other end, is there anybody that was kind of just like awing as you were watching, just like they are at a total another level?
Yeah, it's such a tough question because, I mean, I keep going back to everyone's so good, but
here, I'll narrow it down for you. Besides like Lyle or Tom Schreiber, maybe somebody that like to the fan's eye or like the broadcast may not catch up on, but you being able to be there in person for all those games, we're able to kind of see somebody that may not be getting as much shine as, you know, they typically could. But after you saw them there in person, you're like, man, like that kid can really ball.
I mean, I think a guy like Charlie Bertrand is just like, I mean, there was like a consecutive few weeks where he was just like scoring ridiculous SportsCenter goals. And I believe he came from Merrimack and then he went to UVA, beat us for the national championship my senior year, my fifth or my junior, one of those years. So I think a guy like that, you know, where he might not be as, I guess, highly touted as like Tom Schreiber, but at the end of the day, he just produces results and he's a great player. So I definitely had a lot of fun watching him, even though he was scoring goals on us. I didn't really like to see that, but.
You know, I kind of want to go back to Matt's question as well a little bit here. Because you're talking about like the trash talking on the field and stuff. Was there any, you know, one or two guys you want to throw out there who maybe said some things to you that kind of, you know, stuck out in your mind a little bit? Because we don't, you know, we get mic'd up in here a little bit here and there, but we generally don't get access to the trash talking. Did anybody throw anything kind of really good at you?
Not really. I mean, the first one I mentioned before where the guy was like, you suck, after I threw a ball away, you know, those. A little extra there that I'm not sure I can kind of say on camera, but I think just even like shit like that is just funny to me. Like I did at the end of the day, I threw a shitty pass and he let me hear it. So I was like, you know what? That's funny. You kind of got to give it to him. But then, you know, after the game, when we win, it's kind of like funny to go back and say something. But at the end of the day, I really just want to play and win. So if that stuff gets going, I may jump in, but you know, I'm never going to be like super outgoing about it.
With the semifinals coming up this weekend, you know, we got four teams, Water Dogs versus Whipsnakes, Chaos versus Archers. You know, obviously with the way the league's structured, you've played all these teams. You know, I guess just, you know,
your first impressions of these teams, and you know, you most recently just played the Water Dogs. So I guess we can start there in terms of, you know, what really is such a strength of this team that that made them successful against you guys and throughout the, you know, I guess the last third of this season really is when they really kicked it up.
I think that they're just a really strong team across the board. I mean, offense and defense aside, they're obviously very good there, but like their special teams, I think they did a great job on the wings last week against us. And, you know, they really did well with the 50-50 ground balls, and they have a great goalkeeper, and, you know, it kind of just makes for a perfect team. And just like every other team in the league, they really don't have a shortage of talent on the offensive end. And they were able to put up, you know, a few too many goals, I think, that we were unhappy with. And yeah, they're a really high-powered offense, and it's going to be a battle. I'm excited to kind of see how that game goes with the Whipsnakes.
And then we also have tomorrow night is the PLL Awards Ceremony. If Chris Gray had a MVP vote, who would it go to?
You got to give it to my man Trevor. I mean, he's a game changer. You know, when you have him on your team, you're getting extra possessions. And aside from that, usually you stop there and say, well, the faceoff guy gets his possessions, but he does just about everything else. You know, he stays on the field. He can shoot the ball. When we're shooting in practice, he's like hitting corners. It's like he's an attackman. So he kind of is like an extra threat, and he's very strategic with how he subs and really gets us like transition opportunities. And I mean, he was playing on like a hurt hamstring for half the year, which is just kind of speaks to his character and his dedication. So I may be a little biased, but I'm going to go with Trevor.
How bad was the hamstring as he was trying to kind of battle through it? Was he really like banged up, or just a little nick there?
I mean, it's something that I wouldn't know, and I don't think the rest of the guys would know, because anytime you'd ask him, he'd say, I'm great, I'm ready to go, and I'm rehabbing, I'm feeling good, and I want to get out there. So, you know, it's a tough question to answer.
What do you think? Are you the kind of guy who's going to watch these games the rest of the way? Or, you know, I know some players, you know, want to see how the season plays out, and some of them, like when their season is done, they kind of want to get away from it for a while. Like, what's your plan of action for the next week, 2 weeks, I guess?
Yeah, I'm not one of those guys that will just turn it off and not watch it. You know, I'm more of a watch it, watch lacrosse, and, you know, just let it sting a little bit. You know, it's definitely unfortunate that our team's not there, and I really did feel like, and still do feel like, we had the talent to win the whole thing, but we just didn't play our game and it didn't go our way. But yeah, I mean, I'm not going to not watch a great lacrosse game. And like I said before, you can pick some things up, watch good players and get better. But you know, just got to let it sting for a little bit and let it refuel you for next year.
What do you think is the biggest way that, you know, you're obviously a pro lacrosse player, so you're very good. And but you have to keep improving. Like, there's, you know, the Rob, you brought up Rob Pinnell earlier, and you know, Rob Pinnell he's altered his game over the years, and he's improved in ways, and I think you saw kind of another reinvention of himself in some ways this year, you know, kind of in this later part of a career. Being your first year, like, do you feel that, like, what are the ways that you feel like you're better right now than you were 6 months ago, just from having this 1 year experience of PLL?
I think my shooting, you know, I just think that there's only so many great opportunities in the league to shoot good shots, because you rarely ever have your hands free. So it kind of forces you to pick your spots a little better. And I think it's something that I would kind of take away throughout the week as I would prepare for the games, and really just trying to shoot good shots that I'm going to shoot in the game, and really operating from the side of the field that I'm going to be on, and, you know, shooting for good spots, because all the goalies are so good.
So kind of piggybacking there, and you mentioned that you'll watch and let it sting a little bit. I think right now, if you were to go and find like a random Atlas discourse, you'd find people being critical, potentially of Eric Law, you know, not necessarily being the most dodging threat. I'm curious what you'd say to that criticism. And, you know, you mentioned how much he brings and how much you thought he was a good mentor for you. I'm curious what you think of that.
I mean, look at his output. He was top in the league in points for a reason. You know, our offense is pretty great in that we don't need someone from X dodging and breaking people down and feeding. You know, we have a lot of strategic wing sets and two-man games, and we need a finisher who can turn and finish the ball. And Eric's the best guy in the league to do that. You know, if you look at his shooting percentage, it's I'm assuming one of the highest in the league because he takes great quality shots and he finishes the ball. So he's a critical piece of our offense, and we wouldn't have had nearly the success we did offensively without him. So I would shut that down right away.
How much did you feel like the addition of Clark Peterson kind of towards the end there bolstered the lineup a little bit and kind of gave you guys another dimension?
Yeah, I think Clark was great. I think just in terms of off ball and spacing, he's a very smart player. So even him cutting was able to open up so many other guys for opportunities that they scored on. So he was very impactful even without the ball. His hands, him and Jeff obviously played together in college, but they had the one, Jeff threw him a pass like at his ankles and he caught it and shot it in one motion. And
it was
crazy. So, I mean, just adding a guy like that who's going to catch and finish and also create space for other people who doesn't need the ball, I think is going to help any offense. And we were lucky to have him.
I have to add a little bit of insight to that play there, because it just so happens to be that like one of my closest connections to the league, one of my like best friends, was the short stick that was guarding Clark on that play.
And I heard one of the short sticks come off and go, Jesus, he slung that in there. I don't know how he caught it. And then they just kept running off.
That's basically exactly what I was getting at, was that as that happened, somebody, one of the defenders, yells like, we got to take care of cutters. And like, which is true, but that was pretty ridiculous. And not only was it ridiculous from the fact that like he caught it, but the way that Jeff fed it, like it was like kind of off his, it looked like a shot. And so then you're right, like when he came off, DiNapoli was like, dude, that was incredible. Like, I don't even know.
Yeah, Chris, before you go, I just want to follow up. Eric Law he's 55% shooting percentage, just what you were saying, Chris. He's not the highest in the league, but he's the highest among like offensive players, essentially. A few D Mitchell got the ball three times, you know.
For the record, just to go and clear it up, I'm not in that camp. I'm just saying if you were to go on the discourse, you would find that criticism.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I would take 55% any year. So,
so let me get this one here. Speaking of internet reactions to Atlas players, when the awards came out and, you know, the nominees for the LSM award came out, I don't know if you're on Twitter. I'm on Twitter, and a lot of people started tweeting and were very angry that Craig Chick was not mentioned amongst those LSMs. And he has a very, very, very loyal fan base of people who are very supportive of him. So for those people, please tell us anything about Craig Schick and what he brings to your team.
I mean, rightfully so. I was pretty disappointed to see that, just because I know Schick is, he's a great guy. He's very quiet, but he's one of the hardest working guys on our team. And he creates so much havoc in the middle of the field and generates so much offense for us. But I mean, from a LSM standpoint, he's guarding the best middies in the league. He's stripping them. He's making them he's getting cause turnovers, and he's running the field. I thought he was one of the best, if not the best, in the league this year. Like I said with Trevor before, I might be a little biased, but Chick is unbelievable. He actually guarded me in college one year when I was like a sophomore, and I remember getting stripped like three times in the game, and I was just so disappointed. And now playing with him this year, I'm like, I kind of feel better about myself because he's that good of a player.
Maryland maybe.
He was always the player that we never knew what position to list him at for like postseason awards, because like he was like, you know, he played close defense and he played LSM at the same time. Like he did it all essentially.
Yeah.
So what you know, you said you're down in Chapel Hill, you're living with some current Tar Heels. You know, we talked a little before this recorded about kind of, you know, your involvement with the team this year. And, you know, just from the chatter you've heard of some of the guys and, you know, with fall ball starting, what do you think we can expect from the Tar Heels coming up in the 2023 season?
I think a lot of energy and a lot of fight. You know, I think guys on the team and certainly the guys that graduated, but they don't get another shot at it. You know, we felt really unhappy with how we ended off last year. And even though it was great just to be around a great group of guys for the whole year, we really felt like we didn't hit our goals, and we didn't make the tournament. You know, that's pretty unacceptable, and that's how we felt, that's how the coaches feel. And you know, they've been working really hard this fall, I'm sure, and I'm really excited just to see with how much young talent we had, where it pans out, and a lot of great transfers and a lot of great leadership returning. So they're going to be in good hands for sure. I mean, Coach Bresci, Coach Metz, and Coach Understein are definitely three guys I'd follow. So
Coach Bresci and Jenny Levy were the stars of September 1st in terms of the social media game, though. Their video they put out was pretty spectacular.
Yeah, they might be TikTok famous by now. I'm not sure.
So I'm going to keep it rolling with a few more lacrosse questions here. I don't know how many I can rattle off, but I like my odds to be able to keep finding some.
Chris, if you can't tell, Kaplan is like, he's the lacrosse nerd among the group in terms of.
Totally about to be justified by the fact that. So I've watched the Atlas All In YouTube series, which, by the way, if you haven't watched, feel free to jump on that. The Atlas All In is very entertaining. But on there, they do a bit of a segment about Costabile and him going through a little bit of a lull during the season in terms of shooting. From your perspective, like, how do you feel like that impacted the offense? And, you know, if it did, you know, even just kind of curious what you thought of that.
Yeah, I don't think it did. I mean, when you have such a great year like Costa did the year before, he's going to draw a lot of attention. And then I think that's what he was seeing this year. And it's really just because he deserves it and he's a great player. So, you know, defenses have to pay extra attention to him. And I mean, he can score the ball if he's like four steps in from the midline. So, you know, you have to push out onto him. And I think people were sliding to him really fast. But at the end of the day, I really think that he stepped up when we needed him to. And my thing to him, I would always tell him on the field, keep shooting the ball, you know, because when I'm playing the point on man up, and I think we were playing the chaos, and he must have shot like three in a row that he missed. And I said, just keep shooting, you know, the next one's going in. And I gave it to him and he scored. And, you know, it was actually a 2-pointer. It was a huge goal for us. So I think, when we needed him, he stepped up, and I don't think it impacted our offense at all, to be honest.
From an individual sort of standpoint, Evan, wrapping up, you know, your rookie season, might be a little bit too close to that. But, you know, maybe you've taken some time to think about it. Do you kind of think about what you need to do next season? Is there anything you feel like you want to kind of address in your game or maybe sharpen between now and then?
I mean, the easy answer is everything, just because that's what I'm always going to say. You know, I can always get better. But I think, I think I definitely need to be a little more aggressive. I feel like at times I was hesitant to maybe shoot or throw a feed in there or a dodge. Just because I wanted to fit into with the system and I didn't want to go outside or do anything too crazy. But then at the end of the day, I mean, I think expanding my range would definitely be pretty helpful. Two-pointers are really big in the league, and I've definitely had some opportunities this year that I could have hit some and I didn't. So, I mean, credit to the goalies. The goalies are great. But, I mean, I think just shooting in general is always going to help. You know, shooting, speed, footwork, whatever, you name it.
Chris, you're an SDX athlete. Can you walk everyone through just kind of how you have, what you use, equipment you use, and kind of how do you dial in your stick?
So for my head, I use the new Hyper Power head, which I've really loved. It's pretty unique. It has like that scoop at the top. And I like when the ball kind of hits off the top of my head when I'm throwing. And I feel like, you know, even though it's partly in the way it's strung, I just really have enjoyed using that head. And really any kind of shaft that they have, I use. I was using their carbon handle. Their carbon fiber handle for like the whole year. But I also use one of the like STX SciTie X shafts. And yeah, how do I dial in my stick? I mean, I hate using new sticks. So I'm very particular with how I like my sticks, and they need to throw the exact way that I like. So, I mean, just really wall ball and, you know, having a toss with my friends. I'd rather play catch with someone than play wall ball, but, you know, always just keep it in my hand, I guess.
Do you string it yourself or do you have someone else do it for you?
No, I couldn't even tape my own stick if I tried. I am useless when it comes to stringing, taping. I don't even know if I could screw in a screw to my own shaft, but I have a buddy string them.
Yeah, it's funny. There's I mean, I don't even know what I think I had an edge because, I mean, I'm old, but that's like, you know, what I had in my day. And I couldn't tell you how to do anything in terms of stringing it. We had one guy on the team. He had a big head, so we called him Noggin. He just did everyone's stick, and I didn't even touch it. I just picked it up whenever I needed it, and it was there. That's basically as much as I can do.
it was for some reason just something I never picked up on. I think you start learning from a young age, but I never really had the patience for it, I feel like. So I'd always kind of give it to someone else. And at UNC, I had Jacob Kelly, my line mate. He would always string him. And now that he was gone, I was back home for the summer. My neighbor who plays at Wagner, Christian Mercado, he was stringing me up. So that's what I was using this season.
Gotcha. All right. So I think we're probably getting close to the end here, and I promised that I would at least get you drilled a little bit. I kind of tried to get there with the ELAW question, but it didn't seem to phase you. So now I'll come in with a little bit of heavy hitter. This time next year, what's it take for Atlas to, you know, still be in the equation? That this conversation, if we're having in exactly 365 days, is you're getting ready for a semifinal weekend.
I would say we, you know, I think out of all the games we played this year, I don't think we put a complete full 48 minutes together. You know, we've had games where our offense played really well. We've had games where our defense played well, or maybe Jack was bailing us out in the cage. But I think at the end of the day, we should have to be way more consistent. You know, we have the guys to do it. We have the leadership. We have the team, and we all love being around each other. But at the end of the day, we have to produce results on the field, and we just simply didn't do that this year. And I think next year it's going to take a lot of work in the off season, a lot of work in training camp, but more consistency and, you know, just being a little more focused on what we're doing each day is going to help.
Okay. Now, so I asked a little bit about if you're going to be watching the games moving forward. Do you, and obviously you're an Atlas guy, but do you have any sort of rooting interest on it with any of the other teams or any team, you know, if you got to pick a winner or someone like that, are you kind of cheering for anyone over anybody else?
I don't think I'm necessarily cheering for anyone. So that's a tough question to answer. I mean, I'm definitely a little jealous that I'm not there, but I'm looking forward to just kind of watching. I mean, they're going to be great games, and you know, these four teams are still standing for a reason, and it's going to be a battle on both sides. So I'm really interested to see how it plays out. And I don't even think I could pick a winner if I tried, because at the end of the day, it's any team could beat any team, and just kind of time will tell, I guess.
Are you tired of hearing 2.8% pick the chaos yet? Because I am.
Yeah, I mean, but they proved people wrong, and they came out and everyone was against them, and they did a really good job against a really good Chrome team. So, and he hate it or love it, it's working for them. So we'll see if it can keep going.
And against my better, because I was like kind of in on the chaos early last year, and I haven't so much been this year. And now I'm like, you know, last year I was kind of rallying around with them, and now I'm like, all right, I'm tired of this.
And now you're their hater. You're hating on them.
Yeah. Awesome, Chris. Well, I hope you get to enjoy, you know, watching the games. You know, I know you'd rather be out there on the field, but I hope you can take some kind of comfort in watching the games and enjoying the league. And, you know, it's awesome first year. And, you know, I think we're looking forward to a long Chris Gray career and seeing what you can do in this league over a long period of time here.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, it's been a blast. Thanks for having me on.